Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday night open call. We're going to see about getting our moderators in here, everybody. It is summertime, and everybody seems to be just a little slow in calling in tonight. Just a quick heads up to everybody. Jesse is not going to be with us tonight. He notified me today that he was going to be unexpectedly unavailable. So Jesse will not be with us tonight. We should have the rest of the crew here. And we'll get everybody on board as soon as they get called in here, and we will get started. Hope everybody's had a good week, intervening week. I know it's summertime and people have a lot to do, but as we've so often said, you can't quit learning. That just does not work. You have to continue your efforts if you really want to be effective at what we're doing. And although the schedules can be interrupted some and slowed down some, it's not in your best interest to just beg off for the summer, so to speak. So we got Jeff with us here. I'm still waiting to get the rest of our people in here. Looks like everybody's a little slow tonight, Jeff. What's going on?
You look to me for an answer on that one?
Yeah. Yeah,
I came in slow. I lost track of the time.
Yeah, that's not hard to do with summertime activities. A lot of stuff going on, and it's even a little slow getting people calling, and we're starting to get a lot of people calling in now. But I was telling everybody we just got to give a little time. That Jesse did notify me earlier today that he is not going to be with us tonight. He unexpectedly is going to be unavailable. And that does happen, but that doesn't mean that things don't go on and we're not going to be here to answer questions, to try and help people and make some suggestions on what people might do. So,
anyway, it's 71 degrees here, and we had dinner out on the deck underneath the umbrella.
Oh, man.
It's soaking in a nice environment.
Yeah. Well, it's cooler here in Dallas. It's been cloudy. Pretty much all day. We hit 90, but a couple hours ago I checked the temperature and it was 85. And for the end of July, that's very unusual for us. Normally,
yeah,
we would be we'd be up to 97, 98, anywhere up to maybe 102, something like that.
I don't know about the 102, but we would be in the high 90s here normally.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're still waiting for the rest of the crew. I don't know where everybody is tonight. They're just running a little bit slow. There's Terry. We'll get Terry on here. Good evening,
yeah,
Terry.
I
How
was,
are you?
I was talking, and then I realized you had me muted.
No, I just hadn't unmuted you yet.
I see. Well, anyway, it's 84, and a little nice little breeze plus a fan, and I am quite comfortable on this porch.
Yeah, and Larry has joined us. Good evening, Mr. Larry. He must have gone to the kitchen to get a sandwich already. And we got John here. We'll get him unmuted. Good evening, John. How are you?
I'm good. I called back in because I guess my caller ID didn't show up or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's seemed like everybody was a little slow tonight. We've got Larry and John and Terry and Jeff and myself, and I believe that's all we're going to have tonight. Again, Jesse is not going to be with us. He did notify me earlier in the day that he is unexpectedly going to be unavailable tonight, so that doesn't mean the call doesn't go on. It absolutely does. And want to, first of all, do a quick disclaimer like we always do, rather informal, and tell everybody that what you hear on this call is not legal advice. We're here to discuss legal issues and have discussion. We talk about sometimes good news and stupid lawyer moments and lots of other things. We have a lot of fun. But You're not going to hear legal advice here. If you want legal advice, please go seek out a bar licensed attorney. They are the ones that can dispense legal advice, or at least they supposedly say they can. So, come on, I got to try the unmute on Larry again there. Larry, you with us now?
Yeah, I've been here. You couldn't hear me before?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, I couldn't hear you. I'd hit the your button to unmute you, and evidently for some reason it reversed on me. But we got you now, so good evening, sir.
Hello.
All right. Well, we got the disclaimer out of the way, and of course, you know, as we always do, we always start with good news, and we want to find out what is good that's happening with people out there. So if you have good news, hit the one key on your phone. That is good news only, please. And when I get ready to go to Q&A, I'll make the announcement for that. But right now we're doing strictly good news. So let's go to 817 for good news.
Hey,
good
Dave,
evening. You're unmuted.
Hey, it's Keisha.
I had a feeling that was you. How are you?
It is. I'm good. I have some good news. I guess it would be good news for me. But regarding my FDCPA lawsuit that I had with the attorneys for my house, I actually got served with a 12B6 from them for a motion to dismiss, and they filed it under the wrong case number. So the court had to dismiss it, and then they have to refile again. But I also got in touch with an old friend of mine who is a lawyer in Houston that is going to be helping me with my case. He actually works on the other side as the defendant for the bank, as the corporate attorney for the bank, but has a lot of case law and everything that he's going to be giving me to help me on my side as the plaintiff that he deals with every day. So I'm excited about that.
Oh, yeah, somebody on the other side that's willing to step over, a personal friend that's willing to help you. That's great.
Yes. So that's my good news.
is good news.
It is good news.
Yeah, that's very good. It's always great to have some assistance, and if there's somebody that can give you some good case law that can be used against them, then wonderful.
He said
well,
he would even give me cases. He said he would even give me cases that, you know, maybe that, you know, have involved them, him being the defendant or whatever, so that if it helps me on my side as a good argument or have some good stuff in it, so... He was like, yeah, that's fine. I got you.
Well, good.
So, yeah.
Got your back.
I'm excited
that's
about
wonderful.
That. Yes.
Well, you should be. Absolutely. If I were in your shoes, I'd definitely be excited about that. Man, that works.
Yes,
all right. Well, thank
so.
You, dear. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. And if you would, hit the one key on your phone so that it takes you out of the queue for your... good news as well. And then if you did come back in with a question, go ahead and hit the one key again. All right, I'm going to ask again if anybody else has any good news. Any of the moderators got any good news? Larry, Jeff, Terry, John?
I still haven't heard back from Glass Mountain, so I guess I'll have to follow up with them on Thursday. They were supposed to get back to me by Friday of last week. But my letter to them, my intent to sue, said 10 days, so I'll wait till the 10 days are done and then contact them.
Oh, sure. Well, that's what you got to do. If you gave them 10 days, you got to give them at least that, maybe a little more. Usually I'll give them a little bit more than the 10 days. I'll go out to about 2 weeks, but, you know, just see what they're going to do. Either they're going to talk to you and make, play Let's Make a Deal, or they can... go talk to a jury and see what kind of a deal they can make with them, right?
Right. Or they may just wait until I file my action to see what my medal is.
Mm-hmm. All right. Terry, you got any good news for us?
No. No news
okay.
is... as well, no news so far today is good news if you... know what I
yes,
mean.
Yes, I understand where you are on yours, and you don't want to publicly say anything. The other thing that I will throw out right now so that everybody knows about this, I think most of you know that we are starting to get some attorneys that are starting to work with us, various people, on situations. These are attorneys that are very interested in the consumer protection side of things, not abusing consumers, but there are some good attorneys out there. Unfortunately, as we've said many times, the majority are not. The majority of them out there are just there to line their pockets and could care less about their clients, whether no matter what side they're on, actually. But I had a very interesting development. I received a phone call from an attorney yesterday who had actually found me by doing some research on TCPA, and she came upon an article that was written about me in a case I had filed and that I had settled, and she called me. She looked me up on Pacer, and she called me and wanted to talk to me about what I was doing and how I settled the case, so on and so forth. Well, it turns out that she is in the greater Atlanta area. She is very, very interested in getting much more involved in consumer protection. She actually has several lawsuits that she is doing for people. She is a sole practitioner. She's not in a law firm. She does some other work. I won't mention for who at this point. I am aware of that. But she is very, very interested in learning about what we are doing, and is more than likely, from the indications and the correspondence we've had, going to be becoming quite involved with what we're doing. So I don't know if Tally is listening tonight by any chance. She is a single parent and has limited time in the evenings, obviously. But if she is, welcome. If not, maybe you'll hear this on the archive. But the bottom line is we have another attorney, and she indicated that she may know some other attorneys that would be very, very interested in what we're doing as well. So we'll see how that develops. But as we've said before, we have the doors open to good, ethical attorneys that want to join us and become a part of what we're doing, work with us. We can work with them. We can likely refer some people in the membership to them if there's certain people that have issues that they don't want to deal with specifically themselves. So that situation is always there. Okay, one more time, I'm going to ask if anybody has any good news. If you have good news, hit the one key on the keypad on your phone. If we don't get anybody coming up on that pretty quick here, we will go ahead and move forward with our question and answer. Again, I want to mention to everybody, Jesse is not going to be with us tonight. He notified me earlier today that he is unexpectedly going to be unavailable today, so he should be available next week as far as we know, and he'll be able to answer your more specific foreclosure questions possibly if you have some of those. So in the absence of any more good news tonight, if anybody has questions, go ahead and hit the one key on the keypad in your phone. We will get started, and we'll see if we can get your questions answered for you. We do want to follow the same format that we started again last week. I do want to reiterate that to everybody. We want to keep the questions concise. We want to keep the answers concise. I have Jesse's permission to choke him if he gets too long-winded. And I have his permission to choke any of the other moderators that get too long-winded. So the bottom line is we want to try and be efficient. The main thing is the information in large part that you need is in the website. If you're not a member and you need information, you need to become a member. That's the bottom line. These calls are not to be a replacement for a membership. These are to answer questions to help fit some of the pieces of the puzzle together, the information that you would get and learn from the website. So please be aware of that. Let's keep our questions and our discussion to a reasonable amount of time. That way we can serve lots of people, which is exactly what we did last week. We only had one person that came into the queue right at the end of things that we weren't able to talk to and help last week. So with that said, we're going to go to 919. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
How you guys doing tonight?
Doing pretty good, but you're really kind of muffled and faint.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you a little bit better. You're still pretty distant, but go ahead.
The question that I have, I'm actually wrapping up the discovery process with my case between Texas Guarantee and myself, and a friend of mine was going over some of my paperwork, and they had noticed that in their initial answer, they had stated that as the guarantor agency for the student loan, that they were exempt from the FDCPA or the TCPA. Now, he had suggested that I actually file a motion to strike that part of the answer because they didn't give any supporting evidence, and he said that if I let that go, that the court might use that against me, assuming that they are the guarantor without actually providing any evidence. And I was just wondering if you had any suggestion whether that would actually happen.
I've seen some case law that indicates that a guarantor of a student loan is not a debt collector. However, if they're not trying to collect the debt, why are they calling you?
Yeah, everything that they sent me evidence-wise says this is an attempt by a debt collector to collect a debt. Even the initial disclosures, all their paperwork says that this is a debt collector. Even their training manuals, because I have the training manuals for the company that they sent me in the discovery process, and it has a section in there that says to be aware of the FDCPA. So I find it funny that it's like you're saying you're exempt from the FDCPA, but it's in your own training manual.
Yeah, I think they just sunk their own defense pretty conclusively.
Yeah, I would agree because a guarantor of a loan is not a lender. The creditor is going to be the actual lender is going to be the original creditor. Somebody that guarantees it is simply somebody that guarantees it. They never participate in the loan itself. Therefore, they couldn't be an original creditor.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I think your friend made a good point. Move to strike it.
Yeah. I'm drawing up the motion right now. We have actually had to file an extension because we did the deposition on June 25th, and the discovery deadline was supposed to be July 7th, but I didn't get anything back in reference to the deposition saying that the transcript was ready. So I went ahead and filed a motion to extend the discovery to the 21st. They granted that. But another question that I had was, during the deposition, they asked me pretty much everything under the sun that's irrelevant to this situation and said that I would
not
have
surprising.
To object to that. I would have to object to that at trial if when they go to introduce it. Because they asked me stuff about my son's mother, my custody case, my criminal background, things that had no relevancy. I went ahead and, you know, answered it just to be honest, but I knew it had no relevancy.
Mm-hmm. That's quite common.
Okay.
Now, I have a question for you, sir.
Sure.
Did they file, when you first filed against them, did they file a motion to dismiss?
They sure did not, and that's one of the things that I saw because I said if you guys basically if this was a failure to state a claim upon which relief could be granted, you would have filed a motion to dismiss under Rule 12C. The fact that you didn't do that in your answer shows that you don't have a defense because your defense was if you're exempt, you would have filed that motion.
You would think. You know, if they're going to use the defense that they're guarantor and therefore they're not subject to the FDCPA, they would have filed that motion immediately.
Right.
So
that
raises a lot of questions, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Would you say, Larry?
Totally agree.
That's all I had.
Yeah. Well, I
all
mean,
right, cool. So we're looking at good tape then.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear. You know, they're trying. I believe they very possibly are trying to slip that in to as a sly way to overcome you saying they're a debt collector, you establishing them, because you know how it works. If you don't argue it, that means you must agree
with
it.
You don't rebut it. Exactly.
So argue it and state that they were never at any point the lender, and therefore could not be original creditor.
Original creditor. Right.
Right. And at any such time as they may have acquired the right to collect the debt, that the debt was in default, and therefore, by definition, they are
a debt collector.
Right.
And just one last thing. Filing that motion to strike, there's no, because I didn't do it initially when they first answered, I can still do that during the discovery process, right, just to be clear?
Well, you want to file a motion to strike or a motion in limine at this stage of the game?
Well, your motion in limine isn't going to come in until right before trial.
Right.
Yeah, because you don't even get a ruling on that until you're in the pretrial.
So he can file a motion to strike, and if motion to strike fails, then file a motion in limine.
Gotcha. All right.
Right. You could do that. Yep. Okay. That take care of you?
I appreciate you guys' help. Yes, that was awesome. I thank you guys for everything you do. Appreciate it.
All right. You bet. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Now we got to go to Keisha. Wait a minute.
What?
Come on. The board jumped again. Here we go. Keisha. Yep, Keisha
yes.
again.
Okay. So this is my question, because both myself and the friend that I was working with, we both were having difficulty with this. So the FDCPA claim that I filed for the attorney, the response that they came back with, obviously with the 12B6 motion to dismiss, that got dismissed, and I know they're going to file it again, but it was for the doctrine of qualified immunity. And they were basically saying that it shields them from liability, because obviously they were representing the bank. So they are basically just doing their job, and I can't basically go after them. But what I read about, and then he said what he saw also, was qualified immunity is only applying to government officials, which, I mean, I read that myself. But then also, I was wondering, you know, with it's not in connection with the debt. It's about their behavior on how they attempted to collect it. And when I sent the validation letter to them and they failed to validate, talking about the attorney, that meant that they were supposed to stop all attempts to collect, but they continued. So they put themselves with the statement on the letter about the attempt to collect the debt from a debt collector, plus not validating that debt into the FDCPA part of the law. Isn't that correct?
Well, the way you stated that was a little funny there, but an attorney, Hines versus Jenkins, it goes directly to attorneys collecting debts. Their qualified immunity argument is a red herring.
Well,
there's all sorts of case
argument,
law out there.
They've won this argument, like, I guess, a bunch of times in several cases that, you know, I was going through reading that they had cited with the qualified immunity. But obviously,
okay,
I mean, I think that
Keisha,
those people haven't argued it correctly. Go ahead.
You just hit the nail right on the head. If somebody doesn't argue it properly, they don't understand it, then they're going to win, right?
Right. Okay,
well,
so I just wanted to make sure I was, because that's what I told him. He said, you know, he was like, that could be right then, because, you know, he said, I'm not sure about that, because I haven't, you know, usually that's the way it goes, that they are you know, they're shielded, us as attorneys are shielded from, you know, being sued. I said, but when it comes to the actions that they failed to do, he said, no, it would. He said, yes, I think it would open them up to be subject to it. And we both talked about Hines versus Jenkins. And then he also told me about a case, Thompson versus something. And then I was like, well, and then there was that Wilson versus Draper case. Also, when they failed to validate and attempted to continue to collect.
Yeah. Go into the website, and I believe it's in the Taking Your Money section. There's a document in there, great FDCPA case law. There's all sorts of stuff in there. And that's for everybody.
Okay.
And that document, that stuff that I pulled out of NCLC, and I think I got some other stuff, there's a ton of FDCPA case law on all sorts of different aspects of the FDCPA that's in there. And you're going to find a bunch of stuff in there about the lawyers. So it's right on the website.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I was looking at saving their home. So that's great.
Let me give you a slightly twisted thought to this also, Keisha.
Uh-huh.
Take a look at those cases that they say that they won and see if the people, see if their adversaries were represented by attorneys. Because they're winning that case bodes in favor of the attorney as well, because they're trying to set case law where they're exempt from being sued for FDCPA violations.
Right.
So it would also work in the opposing attorney's favor to give them that.
Oh, I see. Yeah, these were just basic pro se they were actually going after.
It's kind of like the blue flu, Keisha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a strike without a strike.
Right.
Well, if they're dealing with pro ses don't know how to defend that, they're going to go down in flames, are they not?
Yes.
There you go. So go on the website.
So that's what I'm going to do now.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, guys.
All righty, thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right, let's go to 917. You have been unmuted. I think. Hold on. Come on. The board keeps jumping here. 917. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. My first time, and ladies, first time I've called in, and actually the second call I'm listening to. So I'm going to try to make this, try to follow your instructions, make it brief, and ask one question.
Okay. Glad to have you here. Welcome.
And, you know, I'm probably going to go use my card and go become a member later in the week. But this is my question. I have a niece who's buried under a student loan and wants me to help her. Last week I heard something about contacting Sallie Mae and making them prove they have standing to make a legal claim to being owed anything. Or can they be served with some type of a QWR? That's kind of the gist of my question. And are they liable for TCPA violations?
Oh, they can be liable for TCPA. Larry, you want to address that one?
Well, I mean, I remember somebody, was it you, Dave, who was talking about, or maybe it was Jesse.
I think it was Jesse.
Yeah, it was Jesse. Yeah. So, you know, as for that aspect, we don't have that information right now. At least I don't. I don't know if he's talked to any of you guys about it yet.
No, he's developing that with the people, but he's kind of out of the loop at the moment.
Yeah. But, I mean, one of the things to consider is whoever has whoever is collecting the alleged debt now, did they take it over while it was in default? So that's the first question.
Okay, was it in default? Okay.
At the time they took it over. Do you know the answer to that question?
No, I don't. It's a question I have to go and ask. I'm writing it down.
Okay. Because that makes a world of difference. What state are you in? Or what state is she
in? I'm in New York, but she's in Maryland.
Okay. Jeff, what do you got?
I don't have anything on student loans. Sorry.
What about debt collection?
The same thing. If they took it over after it was in, whoever took it over after default, or whoever was assigned after default, they're still a debt collector.
No,
okay,
what about?
I suspect it's like a 90% chance it was in default. It's otherwise, I wouldn't have ever been heard about it from my brother, and if I wouldn't never know
right.
about it. So if it's in
yeah,
default,
see,
they were debt collectors.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so you wouldn't send him a QWR, though?
No. That's real estate related.
Only. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it'd basically be a dispute and demand for validation.
Like a debt validation concept?
Yes.
Right. Right, exactly.
That's the route to go with them, and then
mm-hmm.
where do you go
That's
to?
That's always going to be the route to begin with whenever you get a demand from payment for somebody. Even if it turns out it's an original creditor, it's not something that's going to turn around and bite you. They'll just ignore it and say, we don't have to respond to that. We're the original creditor. But everybody should be in the habit of that being an automatic response. Somebody sends you a demand for payment, you send them a demand for validation. Immediately make sure absolutely you do that within 30 days of receiving the first demand notice.
Otherwise, silence is acquiescence, right?
More
than
well,
yes. No. Well, it changes because the FDCPA states that if you don't dispute it within 30 days of receiving the first communication, the debt collector can assume that the debt is valid and they can continue collections. The difference is if you dispute it and they don't validate it and continue collections, then you have got FDCPA violations under 1692 GB. The other way, you couldn't make that claim. The court would say, well, you didn't make the demand within the first 30 days. So that's why it's so important to make sure you get that done. It should, like I said, be an automatic response for everybody. They want money, you send a demand for validation.
Okay. That prompts another question that's connected to this now. I'm coming into this late. I'm sure that she got mail that went unanswered. This could be I'm getting into this maybe a year later into it. Can I?
Mm-hmm.
Is it still a value to sending off this debt validation?
Yes. Yes.
It still would work.
Well,
it's not going to stop them from attempting to collect, but it still has value.
Right. Yes, it still has value. Do that, and when you send the demand for validation, you'll find there's example letters in the website to do that. And when you send it by certified mail. You don't really need to use the green card with it and spend the extra money for that. But definitely make the letter out, sign it, make a copy of it, keep the copy for your records so that you can show it later on if you need it as evidence in court. You can show, I sent this, I sent it by certified mail, and the Postal Service says they received it at, 10:42 a.m. on May 17th or whatever. Okay.
Is there anything like a QWR that's part of the debt validation concept?
No.
Of going back to ask to prove their debt?
What we just explained to you is
that's
what
it.
You're
okay.
going to be doing with that, right?
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah. You bet. The QWR is real estate related, obviously. That doesn't apply to just debts in general.
I understand. I appreciate your patience with me.
Sure. Well, no problem. We're here to help. That's why
Thank you.
Here. You're very welcome. And welcome. All right. Let's go to 941. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Good evening. I appreciate your time. One quick question. Has anyone had success with a TCPA claim if they have a cell phone with unlimited minutes?
Yes.
Because I've heard you say that if you have to have a restricted plan.
No, actually, there are people that have had success on that. It's about to call.
Okay. That's good, because I've always had unlimited plans. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You're very welcome. Very welcome. All right. Let's go to 541.
Hi, this is Kim.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there.
That's
trying to
good.
Figure out this bankruptcy thing. Yeah. How are you?
Oh, I'm still kicking. They haven't thrown dirt in my face yet.
Well, that's good. Good to hear. So, yeah, on the bankruptcy, I'm just, I did talk to an attorney, but didn't really get a whole lot of clarity from him either on when I want to dismiss it and what is the best way to go about that. Is it better to wait till they move to dismiss it, or as I was told, if I don't file the remaining paperwork within the two-week deadline, the court will dismiss it, or should I move to dismiss it?
Well, it's whatever the best indication you have is, if you're supposed to file your paperwork within 2 weeks, and you don't do that, you have to assume that the court is going to turn around and they're going to dismiss it.
Okay.
Because you failed to follow through and submit your paperwork. So what you would want to do is have your motion to dismiss ready and file it, like maybe right around what would be the deadline for when you would have to submit the paper, so that you have got your motion to dismiss in there beforehand, so that they consider your motion before the court would do it sua sponte.
And is it better? It's better. I'm gathering it's better for me to do it than the court, but I don't know why.
Well,
Larry.
Okay. It has to do, just real quick here, I'll explain this, and then I'll let Jeff go forward. The difference is, if they dismiss it, it's going to be tougher for you to get it off of your credit report going forward.
Okay.
Because that's just the way they operate. There's been some people that have had some experience with that I've talked to. If you dismiss it, then you can go back and argue, I filed, but I never followed through, so there was no bankruptcy. There was simply a bankruptcy filing. There was not a bankruptcy, so you have to take it off my credit report. Okay?
Okay. So I do this 2 days before the sale date, and this is technically going to, you know, I wait till the sale date's passed and then move to dismiss it.
you're going to... You're going to do the BK.
That begs a whole lot of questions, Dave.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to clarify here. You're talking about doing the BK right before the sale,
right?
Or you're already in BK. You're already in the BK.
No, I haven't started it yet. I'm getting the paperwork together.
Okay, all right. You have your paperwork already. You file it right before the sale date. That stays the sale. Okay. Then when you go in, you're going to have a period of time in the BK where you're going to have to submit your paperwork, and actually I think you can ask for like a 14-day extension or a 21-day extension to file your paperwork. That can buy you another couple, 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And before you get to the point where it is going to be dismissed, have your motion to dismiss the bankruptcy ready, so all you have to do is file it into the bankruptcy court.
And then if the other side moves to have it dismissed, I want to get mine in before they do also.
Well, they're not going to move to have it dismissed. If anything, what they're going to do is they're going to do a motion to lift the stay, the automatic stay that occurs when you file the BK.
Okay. So I want to do it as close to the sale as possible to lessen that time frame.
Yeah,
do
it like the day before.
The day before, okay. Because I heard Jeff say the day before earlier.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, you just don't run it down to that day and think that you've got to be there, and then you get caught in traffic, you don't get there in time, and oh, my God. You can do it the day before, and then you can notice them, you can fax them or whatever, and a copy of the BK filing and say, you know, and they've seen it before. It'll be no surprise to them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, well, thank you. I've asked more than one question, but I appreciate your clarifying all that. That was
There's one more thing, too. Larry, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. If she dismisses before the court dismisses, does that not preserve the her ability for the next, if she has to file again in a recent future, preserve her automatic stay so that she doesn't end up with a diminished automatic stay?
You mean if she files again?
Yeah.
There's a limitation to it, and I don't recall exactly what it is. Is it 6 months you have to go between filing bankruptcy?
No, I think not if you dismiss it yourself.
Okay. I don't know the answer to that question. You may be right, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's something that you might want to take a look into is to see, you know, what's available to you if you, you know, when you file your motion to dismiss before the court dismisses the case and see what rights are preserved if you do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
I appreciate that because the attorney mentioned that diminished protection. So, yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just wanted to put a word in your shell because I could not remember, do not remember with any solidarity as to just what it preserves, but I understand it does preserve rights better than what would happen if the court dismissed it.
Okay. That's good to know. That makes sense. All right, Jeff. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Larry, and thank you, Dave.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Larry.
All right. Let's go to what's could be a Skype caller. 111111. We got ones coming out of our ears here. You've been unmuted. Go ahead.
That could be me. Can you hear me?
We're hearing you, so it must be you because nobody else was unmuted.
Is that the chap up in New Hampshire?
Yeah, it's me. I got a feeling that 111 is because I have call blocking on.
That's probably it.
I've got a foreclosure sale notice for August 21st, and so I'm filing two things, a motion for a temporary injunction at the Superior Court, you know, the local court here, and also I'm preparing a federal suit, and I want to make sure that I do them in the correct order or whatever. Now, the temporary restraining order should go first, or the federal suit against them should go first?
They're not connected to each other.
I know they're not connected, but does it make no difference whatsoever?
Are you referring to the federal suit in your TRO?
Excuse me?
Are you referring to the federal action in the
TRO? Yeah, he said he's going to do the TRO on
question.
State.
In the TRO, I have, you know, four causes of action: breach of contract, lack of standing, fraud, and unclean hands. Should I mention in there that there's a federal suit already filed or about to be filed?
I don't think they're going to care about whether you're filing a federal suit.
Right. I presume that it has no bearing on it whatsoever. But,
right. I wouldn't believe it would. Larry, you have any difference of opinion on that?
No, I don't. I don't disagree.
Because the federal suit is for FDCPA, TILA, and RESPA, and the TRO is a totally different issue. That's just to prevent the sale at the moment and keep going. Now, but there's another...
Don't forget to mention in your TRO about if the foreclosure is allowed to proceed, you will be damaged irreparably.
Yes, that's correct.
You will suffer irreparable harm.
Yes, I have that phraseology in the complaint.
Okay, good.
Okay.
The TRO, I want to be heard immediately just by a judge. But I'm alleging certain things in there, such as fraud and unclean hands. And I don't know if should I request a jury trial, and will that interfere with the judge's capacity to make an immediate...
I know. On a TRO, you won't get a jury trial.
You're not getting any kind of a jury trial. You're just asking for a temporary restraining order to stop the sale, pending something else.
Okay, and no further relief or damages, only the injunctive relief.
Well, yeah. Stop and think. Temporary restraining order. You want
the court to restrain them from doing, from taking some particular action. You have to have a basis for that request, and you know, you have to be able to say, well, I need you to stop this until such and such happens. It's not just get a temporary restraining order and that goes on, marches on into oblivion. There has to be a reason you want to stop now, pending the outcome or resolution of whatever. Otherwise, they're not going to grant it. Otherwise, they're just going to say, well, we're not just going to stop that and then, you know, let the clock keep ticking forever. It has to be predicated on something.
Right. So I should, I mean, these people have to prove up that they have standing, but will that occur in the court where I'm filing for the TRO?
Yes.
Yeah. That has to be done at the state court. Remember, your FDCPA case is completely unrelated to that. That's simply about their behavior in attempting to collect the debt, is it not?
Right, right.
Okay.
So,
okay, and I would like to offer a suggestion to you.
Yes.
Lose the word fraud.
Fraud.
Take the word fraud, throw it in the gurgler, and pull the handle.
Yes, I have done that.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, you mentioned it. But, yeah. Yeah, you don't want to go there because the court hears that all the time. The threshold to prove that is very high because you got to prove intent and everything else. And that's, quite frankly, that's a red flag to the court when they see that kind of stuff. It's like, another guy throwing mud at the wall. There's no basis for this TRO.
Yeah,
so
replace it with false and misleading. So you can prove false and misleading, but you can't prove fraud.
Well, what I'm alleging is that they have forged documents.
Well, that's false and misleading, isn't it?
They've provided false and misleading documents in an attempt to foreclose on the property.
Right.
Okay. If something is forged, it's false, is it not?
Yeah.
It is.
Okay, that way you're staying away from that buzzword fraud that the courts don't
like.
Sink
you. That fraud will sink your ship.
Okay. Thank you very much.
But,
you're
all righty. Thank you.
Hope you didn't step in your toes, Dave.
No, that's all right. We're trying to get the answers out and help the people. That's the whole purpose for being here. Let's go to 305. I think that's down in Florida.
Can you hear me?
Good evening. 305. Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Hey, it's Jonathan in Miami. I got an interesting situation here. I filed a case against E-Title for TCPA violations. We've been going back and forth for a while now. We finally came to a settlement agreement for about $5,000, which is not too bad. The weird thing about it is I was about to file my second amended complaint, so I filed a motion for extension of time, and I also filed the notice of settlement. I asked the attorney, you know, opposing counsel, if they would mind. He said no. Well, a day later, I see that the judge had filed a notice of court practice upon party's notice of settlement, but it's a little confusing. It says the parties are notified that they shall file all papers related to the settlement, including any order of dismissal stating specific terms and conditions, no later than August 12th. If the parties do not comply with this order, then the court shall dismiss, underline dismiss, with this case with prejudice or proceed to trial. All pending motions are denied as moot. So I'm just a little bit worried here. I did send an email to the opposing counsel on Friday with the executed settlement agreement, but I feel that that they might try to pull a fast one on me here.
Well, why don't you cross a bridge when you come to it and just proceed like you're going to get it settled?
Okay. Now,
what makes you think they're going
to
try and pull a fast one?
I just don't trust these attorneys.
Okay. Well, the thing is, you've got a settlement, right?
Yes.
You have written documentation in the form of emails, I'm guessing, to the effect that you reached a settlement, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And have you signed the settlement agreement?
Yes, I signed it, executed it, and scanned it and sent it back to them on Friday. So that was the effective date. So they have 10 days to actually come through.
Okay. Now, you and that's to come through and pay you, correct?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. Now, go back to the order of the court. The court said you are to file information with the court within what time frame? By when?
No later than August 12th.
All right, no later than August 12th. Well, you should have your check. By then, I think I would, if I were in your position, what I would probably do is just send an email back. Given the court's, the order issued by the court on July whatever, please be sure that I receive the settlement proceeds before the deadline so that we may timely file the stipulated dismissal with the court.
Okay.
And not incur any additional issues. That's what I would do.
Rat.
Put them on notice. Just remind them, and then just let them do their thing. You know, do they want to have a bunch of hassle? No, they obviously want to settle. That's why you reached an agreement. That's why they sent you the agreement, and you got it signed.
Okay, but the judge is really referring to the my voluntary dismissal after the settlement is complete. That's what he's referring to. I was kind of reading it like I'm supposed to file the emails along with the settlement agreement and all that. So am I reading it incorrect?
Go ahead.
The court doesn't want the emails.
No.
They want a signed agreement.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
Well, the agreement.
If you've got a confidential settlement agreement, that should not be
filed.
Put into the public.
All they should want is a signed stipulation that the case is settled.
Right.
They wouldn't care about anything else.
Right.
Yeah,
talk to the other side and tell them that you would like them to prepare a stipulated dismissal for filing with the court upon such time as you receive the settlement proceeds.
Yeah, some courts want a notice of dismissal, some courts want a motion. So find out which one. I told you already.
And if it's before they give an answer, you can do a unilateral. You can do a one-sided motion to dismiss it. Or if it's past the answer stage, you have to have a joint stipulated dismissal because the other party's entered in.
Keep in mind, that court just wants to make sure it's settled and it's going away for good. That's all they want. They're not trying to see what you're doing on paperwork and what you're agreeing to and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it, guys.
All righty. Very good. Okay. Let's go to another, maybe it's a block caller. I'm getting 1111111 ones into oblivion. You've been unmuted. Go ahead. Hello?
Could that be me?
We're hearing you.
Okay. Well, I had to push to number one, but I don't know what you get on your side.
You're in the queue. It's just that the phone number, we didn't get your phone number. You have your phone number blocked or you're on Skype or something.
Yeah. It might, yes. My name is Bernice, and I have a foreclosure issue. And I have a couple of questions which have kind of now multiplied since I was listening to people. So let me start with the easy one. I'm going to be filing pro se. And I was wondering whether on the website I could find any foreclosure cases that have been won that I might be able to glean how to do it.
Well, it's not a matter of finding a past case that was won and you're going to have the answers on how to do it, because every single foreclosure is different.
Yeah, I'm not
every
talking
single
of,
one.
I'm not talking about the points that I'm going to bring out. I'm just talking about the format
of just filing the lawsuit.
Yeah,
of,
just how to file the lawsuit. You know, I'm planning on going to federal court, and that would be my second question.
Okay. To learn how to structure and properly formulate. Yeah, okay. To learn how to formulate and structure a complaint, you want to go to the SummerSlam webinar series.
Okay.
It's in the archived webinars.
Yes.
And it's a whole series. We took everybody through how to write the complaint and how to deal with informa pauperis going that way, and then things from there. But that's where you're going to want to go to show you how to actually formulate it.
Okay, because I looked through there, but I missed it somewhere. So anyhow, I'll go back and search again, because it really is a great place to search. The other thing
there's a lot there, isn't there?
Yeah, well, I mean, that website, I don't think I'll live long enough to read it all.
I think you might be right.
Oh,
I don't know. Let's hope.
I'm sorry?
Let's hope. Let's hope you do.
Oh.
Well, let's hope you live plenty
long. Oh, yeah. I want to win this case
Absolutely.
Before I go.
You bet.
And then I remember reading on the emails that I get from What Lies in Your Debt that there's going to be an upcoming foreclosure webinar or some such. And I am going to be going within the next 2 weeks. I'm going to be going out to where it's not in my state. So I'm going to have to go to this other state to do the filing and stuff. Will that any of that information be available before then, or
Well, it's not just going to be a webinar. It's going to be the beginning of a complete series of webinars that will go probably almost to the end of the year.
Oh, how wonderful.
That Jesse is going to be doing. Now,
are you aware
of the Foreclosure Bash webinar series that's in the website? That's already there?
No.
Okay. All right. You for your foreclosure stuff, you're going to want to look in the Saving Your Home section.
Okay.
And then you look in the archived webinars, and you find the section where it's Foreclosure Bash.
Okay.
That's a whole series of webinars that Jesse did.
Oh, neat.
And it starts you out with stuff about conditions precedent, the whole thing, what you've got to understand.
Yes.
Now, that stuff would be a very good precursor for you to cover before he starts into the new webinar series, because I don't know if you're aware of this, but Jesse has won 3 foreclosure trials so far this year on his own property.
Well, I think that's wonderful, and that's why I thought maybe he could show me how he structured it, so that I could do likewise. But yes, if it's on there already, I will do that. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that
Keep in mind that the complaint is only the beginning. There's far more to it than that. You know, you do have to structure your complaint properly, but there's an awful lot that follows that to get things done. So that's just the beginning point.
All right. Well, perhaps you can tell me when you file for foreclosure, if you do it, say, the 1st of August, how backlogged are the courts? Because I'm going to have to be going back and forth. It's a commuting process. And so I wonder if you knew about how backlogged the courts are. How long will I have after I file it?
Every single court is different in how it operates. Okay. I know that's not what you wanted to hear. There's
no
way.
Okay. If that's what the truth
no
is, that's what
that
I want to hear.
Yeah,
but
your there's
clerk
no way that
may be
I
able
even
to answer that.
I'm
yeah,
sorry?
Your clerk
may be able to answer that for you.
Okay, good. Yes, I can definitely ask questions.
Yeah.
And then we were talking about the FDCPA. You don't file that with the other forms? In other words, do I do FDCPA complaints in one court and I do the anti-foreclosure estoppel or whatever in another court? Or can I put them together?
No. Your foreclosure, excuse me, your foreclosure action is always going to be in the state court because your state court has jurisdiction over the property records. Okay, so everything related to foreclosure, with them filing foreclosure and you defending, is all going to be done in state court. However, your FDCPA claims going after them, and that is going to be done in federal court.
Well, that's why I thought maybe they were interrelated, that we could do them all together as one, as one deal.
No.
Can't do it as one deal.
No, there's nothing combining there.
Well, I certainly am glad I called tonight.
Yeah.
You're going to save me a whole lot of headaches.
Yeah, well, good. I'm glad you called as well to help give you some clarity. It's obvious you're new and getting started, and there is a bunch to learn. You can do it. The best thing that I can tell you, and all the other moderators and Jesse would echo the same thing, eat the elephant one bite at a time.
Uh-huh.
Don't try and eat the whole elephant in one bite.
You've
got to work at it and study. There's logic to it. Again, in the website, the Saving Your Home section, and then find the Foreclosure Bash webinar series, and then, of course, be listening on the calls as to when the new webinar series starts. But that's going to be every other Tuesday night when that starts.
Okay.
And 1 week we'll have the open call like this. The other week we'll have the webinar series that Jesse will start. But that's going to be a very, very extensive webinar series showing people how he has done what he has done.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And you surely can't argue with his success.
No, that's why I keep hanging in there.
Yeah, good.
Okay, thank you.
Just out of curiosity, out of curiosity, where are you located and where is the property located?
I live in Arkansas in the north central part of the Ozark Mountains.
Okay.
And the property is located in Maryland.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Which is a two-day trip by car.
Uh-huh.
It's easier to fly, but if I have to take all the documents out of the boxes full of documents, then flying is not an option.
Yeah.
So that's why if I can get as much information as possible, that would be, that is always, of course, great. Make one trip at a time. But the FDCPA that I'm filing is against the attorneys who are filing for the foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
why. And you're going to do that locally there in your court.
Yes. No, in Maryland, because that's where the property is.
No, on your FDCPA lawsuit, you will do that in your local district court where you live.
Really?
Yes.
I don't have to go to Maryland to do that.
No, ma'am.
Ah.
Your life just got a little easier, didn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
No, that'll be done right there in your local district court.
Yes.
Where you live.
Yeah, I can make that commute easily.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Thank you all.
You're very welcome, and welcome to things. And as you got questions, feel free to join us on the calls and get the answers and study.
Oh, I'm doing that. Thank you.
Okay. You
bye-bye.
Bet. Thank you. All right. And I want to check Keisha. Keisha, have you got another question for us?
Oh,
you've been unmuted.
Okay, I was actually muted out. When you said, do you have another question, my husband's in the background talking about, she sure does.
Okay, all right. Well, you were in the queue here, so ask your question. We got to keep rock and rolling. We got a bunch of people in here tonight.
Okay, so the question that I have is that, Terry, this is basically for you because I'm dealing with this FCRA lawsuit, and I had a pretrial hearing on Monday, and they had an attorney that, came out to represent them, and he was basically saying that, they actually had a letter that regarding pre-approved offer that they say that they supposedly sent me, in the mail back in 2011, and I want to try to figure out, because I wanted to ask them in my discovery, and I didn't know if I'm on the right line. Who, you know, described the location, the date, the time, you know, and who actually prepared that letter to send it to me, because I know there's no way that they could have a letter from 2011.
Well, no.
For me.
Okay. Funny you bring that up, because the other side said the same thing to me, that, yeah, they had mailed that back in 2008, and I demanded they produce it in discovery, and at that time they said, well, they don't have a copy of it now. Now, twice they swore under oath that they had nothing else, and I kept pushing, and I kept demanding, and they finally, wow, miraculously, they come up with a letter they say is the one they sent in 2008. Now, obviously it's not. It's nothing for them to create a letter because they still use the same letters. They're all form letters,
right,
that they were using back then. So all they have to do is change the date on it and put my old address on it and say, well, this is what we sent. But that is not a certified mail receipt. That is not testimony from the individual who supposedly mailed it. And I'm telling you, there was no individual that supposedly mailed it. And I did get them to admit to that by pressing the issue on wanting to know, okay, then who did it? Who sent it? Who says they mailed me this letter? And I did that in interrogatories. And their answer finally was, well, there were no persons involved. So what are they saying? Exactly what I already knew. It's mm-hmm. all automated and mechanical. I wanted them to admit that on paper. Why? Because then I can address the lack of integrity of mechanical processes and absolutely no proof that a computer generated a letter to me that I did not receive in 2008.
Okay.
You see, you do need to pin them down on, all right, you say that this letter or one like it was sent to me on such and such a date, what exact date, and by whom. Identify the person who generated that mailing to me and the address that it was sent to. Produce proof of mailing. Ask for a certified mail receipt. You want to ask for stuff that you know they can't produce, because you want to get it down in writing on paper that they don't have it. You follow me? It's as important to go after things you know don't exist as it is to go after things that you do know exist. Because then they have to answer, and they have to answer under oath, and they have to come out and say, well, we don't have it.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
Okay. That answer your question?
Yeah. Yep, I'm clear. I got it.
Oh.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you, dear.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's go to 847. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, please. 847, you're up to bat. We're not hearing you. Maybe your handset is muted, possibly.
Did you say 847?
Yes, that's you. Go ahead.
That's me. I'm on. Okay. This is Jack from Illinois, and I just had a quick question here. I'm in foreclosure, and my attorney said it looks like they sold the note, and they've got some other attorneys for City Mortgage on this. And it's a debt collection letter, basically. It says, this firm is a debt collector attempting to collect a debt any information, blah, 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 you know, about that.
Mini Miranda.
And, pardon me?
I say a mini Miranda.
Yes. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what that is.
Oh,
go
okay.
ahead.
So I just want to know, I'm going to respond within the 30 days because it's got all a bunch of paragraphs here. It's got six paragraphs here. And then the last one, it says, pursuant to the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, the firm of Pearson Associates is deemed to be a debt collector and any information, blah, blah, blah. So I was going to, I've been listening, and should I send that one letter, that the demand letter that is an example on the website where it's...
Well,
I
got one quick question to begin with at this point. Are you represented by an attorney?
Yes. And
your attorney should
be
handling things.
Well, you know, I guess maybe to save money or something. He said, you know, just send them a quick letter, you know, saying that, you know, that you're I'm disputing the validity of this debt. And so I just thought I might do something better by
Larry, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it doesn't matter if he has an attorney. He still needs to send the debt validation letter himself.
Okay. But you got to be careful when you're dealing with an attorney on, you know, what you're doing and what you're not doing. That's would be a concern with me. But send your validation letter.
Okay, the one that
Larry said. Yeah,
okay.
It doesn't have to be anything fancy. You don't have to have any big fancy letter. In fact, simple is good.
Oh, okay, because that's what my attorney just told me to write. But I saw this letter on your website, and it's like really long. And I thought, well,
yeah.
Maybe
yeah, you don't need that. You can use the short version.
Oh, okay. All right.
Or even shorter version. There, one of the letters on there refers to a creditor disclosure statement, and you want to take that part out if you see that letter. But something as simple as saying, I'm in receipt of your letter dated such and such. I dispute the debt and demand validation thereof under the FDCPA, sincerely. I mean, that's a debt validation letter.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
You don't need to get real involved. All you're doing is demanding validation.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, sometimes people get into these long-winded things and tell them you need to send me everything but the kitchen sink, and
right. That's
not the case. That's incorrect.
You're disputing the debt and demanding validation because they might be one penny off.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Or they might not own it. You know, it can be
that
big a difference. But you're disputing it and you're demanding validation. In other words, you know, competent evidence that I owe you something contractually.
Right.
So you guys
and be sure when you send that you send it by certified mail as well.
Oh, yeah.
And dealing with a foreclosure, I would suggest on that you probably want to use the green card with it.
Oh, the green card? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So do you guys know anything about what's going on with City Mortgage? They just got sued with, what, billions or something?
Ugh.
Again.
There's all sorts of banks getting sued.
Yeah.
And they're
okay.
negotiating, trying to climb out from underneath the liability that they have.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's...
All right.
I guess that's about it. Okay. Thanks for your input.
Okay. You bet. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Let's go to 917. 917, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please. Hello, 917. If you don't answer up, we're going to move on. Okay, we are going to move on to 909. You've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hello, my name is Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, I have a house has not been foreclosed on for 3 years because I used somebody who, you know, was going to handle it for me to get a, you know, reduced principal amount and, you know, and that sort of thing. And it's been going on for 3 years, and they haven't foreclosed or started to do anything against me, but I'm getting tired of it. And I'm wondering what's the best way to approach it. I'd like to have the principal reduced to current value with some, you know, rather upside down and current interest rates. Is there a good way I can use the what lies in your mortgage process here, or am I, should I just deal directly with the bank and try Bank of America and try that way, do you think?
Oh, good luck on dealing with Bank of America. The only thing they're real good at is stealing property.
Mm-hmm.
You said you had somebody that was working on this. Who did you have? Was it an attorney or what?
No, it's it was a private individual. He did the whole investigation to see if it was securitized, and it is. And he spoke on my behalf with the bank. And now I think he's kind of nervous about talking to him because there was some sort of recent lawsuit and ruling against such people who are claiming to act on, you know, homeowners' behalf to get their mortgage reduced and blah, 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 like this, without properly licensed and that
sort of
thing.
There's been a lot of fraud in that arena, a terrific amount of fraud.
Exactly. And he's been pretty good, you know, all along, but I don't think he knows what to do, or he's kind of afraid to call him or something because of that, and he's not returning my calls lately, so I'm kind of looking into other things.
Well. Now you said he's been pretty good. If he was pretty good, how come he hasn't gotten something all signed, sealed, and delivered for you in 3 years?
Well, yeah, nothing's happened.
I guess
in 3 years.
That'd be my big question.
Okay, good point, and that's why I'm investigating other things.
Right. Okay. So basically, where you are is you're figuring at this point he's had no effect.
Yeah.
And he won't talk to you, he won't take your calls or anything. Basically, he's just disappeared on you, right?
No, virtually, you know, every couple of weeks he'll say, oh, I'm on the phone or I'm busy or something like that, you know. I mean, I think he's afraid to completely blow me off, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to look at it, you got to look at the obvious sometimes. If he's not talking to you about it, he's not doing anything. And I'm sure you already paid him for his services.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I think what I might do if I were in your position is send him a certified letter and tell him that if he doesn't communicate with you, that you are going to turn over his name to the Attorney General of your state for fraud and taking your money and not providing services to you.
Okay.
And ask him if he would like to communicate with you or whether he would prefer that you take that action. Which would he like to do?
Okay.
I'd give him seven days.
Okay. I wouldn't. I'm kind of thinking it's kind of like a, I don't know if I would be able to get any more from him anyway. I mean, I've saved, you know, 3 years worth of mortgage and stuff, but I'm still, you know, it's just been paid, as I'm told.
Yeah, well, the whole point that I'm getting at by doing it is you're forcing the issue with him. Maybe he'll tell you something of where you are, or he'll just bow out, and then you can proceed forward. You know, maybe he'll get a hold of you and say, oh, well, hey, I don't want you to do that. Well, then tell me what you've done. What's the status of things right now so that I have an idea? What is, you know, what communication have you had with these people? In other words, you want to find out a little bit more of what you're doing. But if you're not making payments, you haven't made payments for 3 years, you got to be careful of something. Why would you kick the sleeping dog that it might wake up and bite you?
They've been called. Yeah, that's a good point. That's what I've been kind of saying all this time, but they've called, they've been, and I just haven't taken their calls all these years. And I finally have this one lady's gotten through to me. She's like, okay, we want you to do a hemp or a hamp. And I'm pretty sure I don't qualify for those. But anyway, I'm talking to one of their customer service type people.
So you are communicating with them. All right.
Yeah, very, very loosely, yeah. No commitments.
Okay. Well,
no,
and the other guy is out of the picture. He didn't accomplish anything, obviously.
Yeah, he did not accomplish
what
we were have to do.
Right. Okay. How long have you been talking to the bank?
Oh, maybe 4 months, I guess.
Okay. Do they seem like they're escalating things?
No. It seems like they just want to do their like that's their job to do something, you know, and they're trying to and they're doing something.
Okay. All right. Real quick here, because we've been on here about as much as time-wise that we can do. What exactly is it that you want to accomplish?
Well, I started out with a trying to get a reduced principal to current value of the house and then current interest rates. You know, I'd be happy if I could get that, you know?
Okay. Is that what your goal is?
I think so. I'm not trying to get the house for free or anything like that. I think that's the next best thing.
Okay. All right. Well, if that's what you want and the other guy hasn't done anything, then I think all you can do is talk to them and see what you can work out with them. I mean, they're willing to talk to you about things, see if you can and work out an agreement for principal reduction. I mean, if that's what works best for you, that's what you should do. But in lieu of that, let's say if they don't do that, they refuse, then where are you? You're looking at a foreclosure situation, right?
Or short sale, yeah. Foreclosure,
okay,
short sale.
All right. Then my suggestion to you would be, and this is just my personal suggestion, that there's a reasonable possibility that they're not going to work with you on principal reduction. They're just going to say, no, we're just going to steal your home, because they're known for that. Okay?
Yeah.
We're going to foreclose and we're going to take your home. All right. What you might want to do as a backdrop and as a backup to you trying to get a principal reduction and stuff is get into the website and start studying in the Saving Your Home section in the foreclosure bash and learn how to deal with that. And if they want to start the foreclosure proceedings, using that information, even if you don't end up with your house, if you end up in your house for another couple of years plus as a result of your education, then you're going to be a heck of a lot of money ahead, and you should be stashing your monthly payments anyway so that you got a nest egg to go.
Okay, that's good.
Does that make
good
sense?
Good advice. Yes.
In other words, plan B.
Yeah, okay, good. And that helps me with the correct sequence to approach it. That's a big help. Okay.
All righty.
I will. Yes, I know you want to wrap things up, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we got to keep going to other callers here.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
All right. No, I'm not a sir. I used to work for a living, but I'm retired now. But thanks a lot. Okay. Let's go to 815. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hey there, Dave. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Oh, just peachy keen.
I can tell
Terry,
by the
how
sound
you doing?
Of your voice.
Well, actually, I am because of you and our email earlier to do with
oh,
the
okay.
To
Did
do
you
with
find
the,
what you were looking for?
Autumn. No.
Okay. Oh, darn.
Well, I'll get there eventually. It's just the first half of the day I started off with a bad hair day, but
Uh-oh.
It got better.
Oh.
So,
well, I'm glad to hear that.
Right. Well, you know, as I was typing that email back and forth with you out of humor, I thought, well, I'm going to try another sequence in the almighty Google. And so I typed in automatic telephone dialers, Illinois, right?
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, we have an automatic telephone dialers act that I did not know about.
Well, imagine that.
Right. So I was like, hey, wait a minute, this might actually be neat. So anyway, one part of the act states, it is a violation of this act to play a pre-recorded message placed by an auto dialer without the consent of the called party. And pretty much every debt collector that's ever called me has done that. Including diversified consultants, who I just filed my complaint for. And so here's the really weird thing, because I wanted to ask this. This kind of threw me off, because it says enforcement, but it says C, and then it says enforcement by customer, and it says any customer injured by a violation of this act may bring an action for the recovery of damages. Judgment may be entered for 3 times the amount at which the actual damages are assessed, plus costs and reasonable attorney fees, in addition to the damages authorized under subsection C. A consumer may obtain statutory damages in the amount of $500 per violation. But the weird thing is, you know, it said enforcement by customer, but it doesn't give a definition of customer. I mean, I understand customer, but that kind of threw me off. Any thought on that, on what they might
do
mean?
Do some research.
Or does that still apply as a consumer? I couldn't find it anywhere. It was kind of like the rest of that stuff from the auto dialers that I was trying to find. Just can't
find
it.
I think to get that definition, you're going to need to do a little more research. I can't help but believe that there is a definition out there for that somewhere.
Oh,
you
I'm
just
sure.
Found it.
Right. Yeah. It kind of goes.
Yeah, but that goes right directly to what you were looking for. You found
right.
your state statute on that. It's just
right.
Like I had mentioned on one of the calls, my friend Leon up in Kansas did a lot of digging into Kansas statutes, and up there when they call people that are violations of the do not call list, it's $20,000 per call statutory damages.
Wow.
Everybody is encouraged to look at your state laws. There can be hidden gold mines there.
Oh, yeah, I'd been...
$20,000 per call.
Wow. I might want to relocate in the next suit.
Yeah. I've thought about going to Kansas and getting an address there myself because he's got...
Yeah. Maybe I should... Wow.
Yeah.
Holy Moses.
Kansas has got tremendous... They're basically their state FDCPA statute is 5,000. Or is it 10,000? No, I guess it's 10,000 per violation.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty onerous for the people that are the violators.
Wow, I'm going to go down there before I start my midlife crisis so I can get a vet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy Moses.
So anyway, you found your stuff.
Sorry.
So, you know, your question there, I think you just have to do some more research, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Get your definition of customer. It's got to be out there somewhere.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Right on.
Look in the mirror, make sure your hair is right before you get to work. You don't have another bad hair day. And you can be even more efficient.
Right.
Have you picked out your red sports car yet?
Yes. Well, if I go to Kansas, I'm going to have multiple colors.
Yeah.
Mercy. Wow.
Yep.
That's wild. Very cool. All righty, guys. I will see you.
All righty.
Bye.
Thank you, buddy. Goodness. Yeah, Kansas is quite a place for that. Let's go to 216. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hey, buddy.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm still doing. I haven't thrown dirt in my face yet.
Uh-oh. Don't let them do that. Okay, this is Bill out of Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah, can you get off your speakerphone? It's hard to hear you.
Oh, wow. Let me see. I'm on my computer, so that's the bad thing.
Oh, okay. Well, you're better now. You're better now.
Okay, good. Great. Okay, I got a couple of questions for you. Let's say I am a co-signer on a loan. It's a college loan. And, of course, the college student is defaulting. Is there any way that you know that I can actually get off as the co-signer?
No.
See, one of the things that people do not know, realize, or understand, the co-signer is primarily liable.
Oh, primarily?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right up there with the person that signed it.
Okay.
If they can't collect it from the other party, they're coming straight to you. because you, when you co-signed, you said, I'll make good on it if they screw up.
Well, let me ask you this. If I only signed it for 1 year and somebody ended up signing it for each year thereof, do I have a fighting chance?
I don't understand exactly what you mean.
Never heard of such a thing.
I co-signed for 1 year, and 3 years later, it seemed like I was co-signed for the entire stay in college.
So is this a drawdown type of loan?
Say that again?
Is this a drawdown type of loan?
I don't know. It's with Sallie Mae. I have to do more research on it.
Well, it's a matter of how it was structured as to whether it's something that, you know, you draw some for the first year, you draw some for the second, third, and fourth years. If you set up the loan in the beginning to be that way so that you've got the financing for all 4 years, then you're probably on the hook for that.
Okay, is there anything that I can do to make sure that let me ask you this. Let me back into it. Is there anything that I could do? You said earlier I can't do anything to get myself off the loan, correct?
I don't know of anything. That's what I'm telling you. I'm not telling you you can't. I'm not aware of any way that you could do it. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Well, let's say this. Okay, it's actually a relative of mine, and what happened was, they came and they cried and boo-hooed and, you know, said that they were going to make good on it if I co-signed, and of course I believe them. And now it's time for them to pay, and they're not paying. So, just by based on the information that I have in the back office, I can really go and put a lien on their property.
No, you can't.
I can't?
No. No, because you just had a verbal agreement with your family member. You just said, I'll back you up. And what it boils down to is they lied to you. They said they're going to take care of it, and they're not. That doesn't give you any right to go and put a lien on anybody. There's no basis for your lien.
I disagree.
Well, you can disagree, but I'm talking from a legal basis.
Okay, go ahead.
Generally speaking, an oral contract's only good for 1 year. So if they told you that at the beginning, the oral contract's gone.
So you're saying I have no standing because the oral contract statute of limitations is up?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you're talking about an agreement between you and your family member. Whoever's trying to collect the student loan, that's a whole different deal. That's got nothing to do with any agreement you had with your family member. There was a loan made that, and you stepped up to guarantee it because they were saying, "Wait a minute, we don't think this other person is quite creditworthy. We need somebody else to back it up." And you said, "Okay, I'll do it." So now your dispute is going to have to proceed very independently of them trying to collect that. If you have a dispute with your family member, you're going to have to take that. Whether you want to go into litigation with them and say, look, if I've got to pay this thing, you made an agreement with me you were going to pay it. Whether you want to go into litigation, sue them and say, hey, you owe me for what I've paid out on your school loan, then you're going to have to see how that would proceed through the court in itself. But you can't just go put a lien on somebody. That would be just like, that'd be just like if I loaned Jeff $100 and he said, I'll pay you next week, and he didn't pay me next week, I can't go and put a lien on Jeff. There's no basis for me to put a lien on Jeff. It's a broken promise, but the only way that I could do anything would be to take and sue Jeff and say, Jeff didn't pay me back. He borrowed $100. He said he was going to pay me in a week. He didn't pay me. So now I've got him in court in a civil lawsuit. If I get a judgment against him, then I can put that judgment, I can file that judgment and possibly put a lien on property as a result of the judgment. But you can't just go and put a lien on somebody.
Okay, let me ask you this, because I do contracts at work, too, and my boss, he has put mechanic liens on people's houses.
That's a mechanic's lien, that's a special environment, and you don't have the reach of that.
Yeah, that is a completely different situation.
I didn't understand. Say that one more time.
That is a particular or special environment, and you do not have the reach of that.
Yeah, mechanic's liens are for when somebody performs services on a property and they don't get paid. There's statutes that cover that where that person can then go put a mechanic's lien on. Like if you hired a plumber, they came in and did $5,000 worth of work and you paid them $2,000 and you never paid them the other three, they can put a mechanic's lien against your property for that other $3,000. That you can't just do that on some verbal agreement you have with somebody like your family member. Those are two completely different issues.
Okay, one last question, and this is just changing the subject. If I own like two free and clear properties, can I cloud the title with one of my companies?
I don't know exactly what you're talking about clouding the title.
You need to have long arms on that.
Okay,
Jeff,
so
you need to explain that in plain terms.
I'm pretty sure he knows exactly what I'm talking about.
It, please explain it in plain terms so everybody listening can understand what you're saying.
All right, if you own the company and you put a lien on your property, you still own the property, and you still own the lien. The lien doesn't exist.
Okay.
It's like people who form a trust and make themselves beneficiaries and the trustee. That's not a trust. That's ownership.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, does this answer
your
question?
I hear you struggling, and you're trying to go down to get to the right area, but you're taking the wrong roads to get there.
Gotcha. What's your name?
You
got to
be careful there.
What's your name?
This is Jeff.
Jeff, okay. You sound a new voice because, I mean, that's good information.
Well, I've kind of had the same voice for a good many years now.
Well, I mean, you know.
Yeah. All right. We got to keep moving here, buddy.
All right. Thanks, man.
You bet. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, let's go to 206. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Jesse.
Jesse's
Hello.
Not with us tonight.
Oh, Dave. Okay. You hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. This is Dave,
okay.
But Jesse is not with us tonight. He was not able to get on the call tonight. He had some other things that were pressing.
Okay. Hey, I got a good news, and also I have a question too. Remember that a while ago I was calling and asking for opinion about how to vacate the default judgment, and I got them. So the default judgment filed against me on the debt collector had been vacated.
Good.
Because you know, yeah,
wonderful.
That's wonderful, and I follow your guy.
But
so
you do understand the case hasn't gone away. You still have to fight the case.
Yeah, you were absolutely right about that. And when I motioned, you know, to dismiss the case and have the debt collector reserve the summons and complaint again, and the judge said nope, because you guys already here. You know it now. So I will vacate the judgment, but the complaint is still in effect, and you have 20 days to answer the complaint, which is
That's
I have
right.
no problem with that. I have no problem with that. I'm okay with that. But when I file adjustment against you without your knowledge, without
serving you the paperwork or none of that is totally messed up. So I got it all done.
Okay, so what's your question?
I just wanted to make sure you were clear about that, that's all.
Yeah, okay, good, good. That's absolutely right. And the second question is, I got adjustment from the other credit card, and, you know, summary adjustment. The court is based, they just, you know, totally messed me up. I do motion for reconsideration because there is a material fact in dispute, and the judge denied that because I filed the dispute notice and sworn denial notice and all that stuff, and she just doesn't care anything. So she ran a motion for summary judgment, and now I got a judgment. So I put in a motion for reconsideration the summary judgment from the plaintiff, and she denied that too. So now I'm worried about that they're going to do the garnishment on my way. So
well, you need to go into the website, and you need to read the material on protecting your money and protecting your assets, and learn how to make yourself garnishment proof.
Oh well, do I have enough time? Because
I don't know. I don't know how much time you have, but what I would suggest you do is start studying tonight.
Yeah, I've been looking through the website and see, you know, there are a couple form letters and stuff on the website say how to stop the garnishment, and there are some victories over that matter.
Well, no, it's not
because,
a matter of
yeah.
stopping a garnishment. It's a matter of making yourself garnishment proof. And you go in and read in the website, you study in there, you'll find the information on that. There's a way to do that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I will go through that tonight and look at it and see. Because they have after 10 days from the judgment day, they can stock the garnishment.
Yeah, well, they,
and,
sometimes they move quickly and sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm.
But my point to you, again, is if I were in your position, I would be in there
mm-hmm.
studying the material to learn how to stop that tonight. I wouldn't even wait until tomorrow. I would start learning and acting on that immediately. Don't worry about whether it's going to happen. Make sure it doesn't happen by taking action.
Okay, I will do that. Do that tonight.
Okay.
But I have another question, too. I'm going to file the appeal on the appeal court for the summary judgment decision. So during the appeal, are they still be able to do the garnishment, or the garnishment has to be stopped?
Probably. Well, if it's an appeal, then I don't think you're going to have to worry about a garnishment.
Oh, really? Okay, then.
Because if they tried to do that, then you could get a TRO on that saying that the judgment has been appealed. If you will get going and study and learn the process to make yourself judgment proof and garnishment proof there,
mm-hmm.
you get that done quickly, and then you'll probably be ahead of the curve. But I would not waste any time. I wouldn't be thinking about it and think, well, you know, one of these days I got to get in there and do it. No, I'd be in there tonight.
No, 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 no.
I'm
going to do it right away.
Okay.
When it's over.
All right.
Both sides, so the appearance and also the garnishment proof.
Right. Yep.
All right. Okay. That's it. That's all for me. Thank you very much, guys.
Okay. Thank you very much. You bet.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sometimes you get to, you find yourself in these situations, and it is in your best interest to move very quickly, and that, I believe, is one of them. Let's go to 770. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Is that me?
I think it's you because I'm hearing your voice.
Wonderful. My
Good
name
evening.
Is Marva from Georgia, and I have great news. One, Shante and I joined as members, and so I'm very delighted about that.
Oh, very good.
Part,
well, welcome.
Thank you. The second part of that is that I desperately need help. I want to stop a foreclosure and save a home place. My mom passed away in 2012, and I've been in communication with the mortgage company, which I think on their correspondence it says they're a debt collector, Champion Mortgage, Nation Star, and Citus Financial is involved in it. They're using Rogers as a substitute trustee. And I've heard so much different terminology, but I'm not sure that I know what all the terminology means and just wanting to know what to do. I heard about the produce the note strategy, and I'm not sure. I'm scheduled for, I got a notice of hearing for August the 6th. They had scheduled
notice of hearing for what?
For foreclosure. And they had scheduled one before, and they postponed it. And so they did an amended notice of hearing. And
what state are you in?
It would be in North Carolina, and it's being done via a judicial process. Although North Carolina
is judicial.
Yes, they're having to go through the court. That's what I mean by that, because I saw on the website that North Carolina is a non-judicial state, but they are having to go through.
North Carolina has kind of got a two-track deal from what I understand. I'm not real familiar with it. Jesse is, but.
Okay.
So your specific question again is?
What do I do? Where do I even start? I mean, I've heard so many different things. I just want to be sure to stop it, and what do I definitely need to do before the 6th to bring it to a halt, which, by the way, I've sent correspondence to them and talked to them. I've asked them to produce the note in terms of Champion. However, I talked to someone maybe about a week and a half ago, and she told me that they don't have the note, that they probably destroyed the note. They sent what was a copy. And then I had requested it again, and they sent me something different. So they seem to have sent me different information at different points. And she said that they probably have destroyed it, and that them sending me a copy is an okay thing.
They destroyed the note, but sending you a copy is okay. But yet we're trying to collect on the note that we destroyed.
Right.
Does that make any sense to?
It makes absolutely no sense.
And they're telling you that on the phone, yeah. John?
Yes.
John, do you want to give her an overview on how it would do, how she should take things from here? Are you a little familiar with any of the stuff in North Carolina from your discussions with Jesse?
I'm more familiar with Florida, but North Carolina's judicial?
Yeah, this is a judicial proceeding she's dealing with.
Okay, and just give me a brief recap.
But she's got a hearing
recap
coming up early August.
For foreclosure.
It's a notice of hearing.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So they served you, and where are you with the whole thing?
We want the house.
I understand.
He's talking about
that,
the process.
You were served with a lawsuit. Did you file an answer?
I have not filed an answer yet. And a question
is the answer due?
It did not specify a date when the answer was due.
When were you served?
I was served last month. And it did make reference. Well, they kind of lied. Rogers kind of lied and said that no request had been made for information or documentation, but I had made requests to them as a substitute trustee to produce the note as well as the transaction history, and I also made it to Champion. But then the question I had is, do I need to actually file that in the court to validate that I have done it as a discovery process, or what?
What I'm trying to get at is, you know, when you get served with a lawsuit, you normally have to respond with your answer before you even get to discovery.
Okay.
And that would be in your state rules of civil procedure, and also your local rules apply.
Okay.
I don't think she's going to know what local rules are.
Explain local rules, John.
The local rules are the particular rules of your local court.
Okay.
And there may or may not be local rules.
Right.
Okay.
Just so
how
you
would
know.
I find that out? How would I find that out?
You have to take Google, and you can Google for the North Carolina Rules of Civil Procedure, and then you look on the thing you were served with, and it'll state what court it is, and you can type in the name of the court and say local rules and see if anything comes up.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, that's all this stuff is governed by rules. And if you just file things in and the judge goes, oh, no, not another one of these again, you know, you aren't going to get too far in defense. But if you can follow the rules and come up with proper pleadings, then you'll grab their attention and they'll give you more time to deal with things. I mean, they'll actually give you time to do filings and you can put in enlargements of time and things like that. But you just don't go to discovery when you haven't even responded to the lawsuit.
Okay.
Because they can just come along and do a motion for default when you haven't even answered.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
okay,
you could
so
be
I
in
need
a precarious
to...
position depending on when you were served. Because normally you're going to have to answer even at the outside within 30 days of being served.
Okay.
So that's something you're going to need to find out and address you know, 5 minutes ago, literally, almost.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically I need to go online, Google rules of civil procedure for foreclosure. Is that what it is that I'm looking up?
It's the North Carolina Rules of Civil Procedure.
Yes, okay.
And read them and see what they say.
Okay,
yeah, and specifically in regard to being served with a complaint and when you're required to answer.
Okay. Very good. I know that in the what they sent, he referenced a particular statute, like that there had been no documentation requested pursuant to whatever the statute was. I did look up that statute, and that seemed almost like a discovery kind of thing. That's why I asked.
Okay. One thing I'm going to mention to you at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You
yes.
stated that you looked up a statute, but your statements about things are quite vague.
Okay.
Let me finish, please. One thing that you're going to have to get used to is when you're dealing with these legal issues, you're going to have to read and think about everything you read. You can't just skim over something and say, well, it was saying something about. No, you need to read it and understand it and know exactly what things are saying, because if you don't, you're not going to get very far. The legal is detailed. It's not about, well, the big picture. No, it's about details, because where they are going to get you as a pro se is on procedures. And that goes to what we were talking about you not having answered the complaint yet. That's where the lawyers beat pro ses every day of the week. So detail, please. You're going to want to kind of gear yourself to that. I'm not admonishing you in any way. I'm just bringing it to your attention that's something you're going to have to do to be successful in what you're trying to do, okay?
And in some jurisdictions, they don't cause an... In some jurisdictions, they don't call for an answer right away. They have an initial hearing like they do in a small claims court. And if you walk in there and you don't understand how the rules of the court operate and you end up arguing with the judge, you dug yourself a deep pit.
Okay.
So you need to understand how this operates.
Okay. I know before when we went to the hearing before and they didn't show up, they came out and said it was postponed. So I did inquire as to whether we needed to submit anything and what they indicated was that they couldn't do anything. They weren't going to do anything until they scheduled. So obviously you're right. I mean, there are rules, and there wasn't anything that we could have done at that point based on what we were told.
Well, you got to be real careful about what you're told by people, because sometimes you are told things that are an error. That's why you need to study and rule, or the rules, and understand exactly what is required, and not rely on comments from somebody else, because you will find that people will give you inaccurate information. And the last thing you ever want to do, and you may be aware of this, but I'm going to say it anyway, whatever you do, don't trust anything that the lawyers on the other side say. Nothing whatsoever.
Well, I definitely hear you on that. And this particular, I found there's so much corruption here in this area that
It's everywhere, believe me. It's everywhere.
Yeah, but even with that, as long as you play within the rules, you're going to be a lot better off. You can't just throw your hands up and say corruption, because they don't want to hear that. But if you happen to find out that you're within the period of time to do your answer, then the appropriate thing to do would go in and file an enlargement of time to answer. Because you can ask for an additional 30 days, and one of the things you could do is say, you know, you're looking for an attorney. That's a plausible reason to need 30 days. You know, you're trying to find the right attorney to help you with this, and that'll at least give you time to study up on the website and see what you need to do next. And even if you had to respond within 21 days and you're like 3 or 4 or 5 days over, you can still go in there and file a motion for enlargement of time. The court may or may not grant it, but if you're a pro se and at least you make an effort, they might give you the benefit of the doubt based on the fact that they've got a backed up court system with a whole bunch of these going on.
The document that you would want to file would be a motion for enlargement of time to answer.
Okay, I will definitely do that. Can I ask you another question? I also got the tax bill for this year. Very interestingly, it's in my name, and I'm just wondering how that would be the case, and what would that mean?
I don't know. There's no way for me to know. I think... You know, if you want to get information on that, I would talk to the taxing authority that sent the bill and say, why is this coming in my name?
Okay.
How did it get to that position?
Okay.
And
Thanks a lot. You
need to look on your summons, because while we've been talking, I've been Googling for North Carolina, and, you know, basically it should be on the summons. The summons should give you the amount of time you have to respond. And from what I'm seeing, and I can't say this is correct because it's a third-party website, generally you have 28 calendar days from the date you were served with the complaint and summons to answer and request mediation. Some courts have a shorter deadline to request mediation. The date you were served with the complaint is the date you received the complaint by certified mail or personal service, whichever came first. If you received the summons and complaint from the court by regular mail, you have 28 days from the date postmarked on the envelope papers came in to file your answer and serve copies to other parties. So, for example, if it came to you and it listed in the summons list your husband and other people, then you're the responsible party to notify them in Carolina, from what I'm seeing here. So just Google. That's the best thing you can do, and just keep going until you get the answer you're looking for.
Okay, so I'm Googling North Carolina Civil Rules of Procedure.
That's one thing that you need to get is a copy of the North Carolina Rules of Civil Procedure.
Okay.
And then if you go to a thing that's communitylegalaid.org, it's a website I found, and they have things that explain to you as a pro se how you file things in North Carolina. So that might help you a little bit.
Okay. Can I ask one other quick question?
It's got to be very quick because it's time for us to wrap up.
Okay. Are you guys do you help with landlord-tenant issues as well?
Generally, we don't get into that. Generally, the area we work in is with debt issues.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess maybe I can – well, the question I have is, if a landlord changes the lock and they deny access, and then they subsequently file a false affidavit, which it appears they were trying to circumvent the process. They then give a key, but then they change the locks again after we have moved some of the things out, so now we're not able to get the things out. Is there anything that we can do? Or
are you the landlord or the tenant?
Are you the landlord or the tenant?
Tenant.
You're the tenant. Well, if they've changed the locks
tenant,
on you.
Well, I'm not a tenant.
Yeah, if they've changed the locks on you and your stuff's in there, they've taken possession of the property and the things that are in there, and you're going to have to contact them. If you break in and they catch you, they can say that you're breaking and entering. So
right.
It's a very fine area there. Whether they followed the law or not is one of those things you have to go in front of a judge, but sometimes you have to preserve your own property. So that's a personal judgment call. You just have to be careful.
Now, if you go into – you just keep in mind, if you go to break in there and get your stuff – you can be dealing with criminal charges of breaking and entering.
Oh, no, we would never do anything like that.
Okay,
I mean,
okay. I just want to bring that
like
up because, believe me, sometimes people do that. So
we don't want anybody getting in trouble.
Yeah. All right, Jeff, you had one last comment, and then we got to go. Okay.
In some states, landlord-tenant affairs are treated just the same as if you were renting a hotel room where they can actually lock it up. And lock you out. You're going to have to check to see what the rules are for your landlord-tenant relations in the rules of civil procedure.
Right.
Okay. Well, based on what we were told, it's a retaliatory eviction. That's basically what happened. And then they filed a false affidavit to circumvent the process of having a hearing to take possession.
You'd have to battle that out before the court.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
All righty. Thank you.
Thank you so
much.
All
right, everybody. We got to wrap it up for tonight. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us tonight. Obviously, tomorrow is Wednesday. We do have a webinar tomorrow, and I was going to look up, and I neglected to do so and see who is doing the webinar tomorrow. I believe that's Terry. Am I correct, Terry? And you want to give us a very brief overview of what you're doing tomorrow?
That is The Nature of the Predator, Part 2. A lot of really good information in there. Don't miss it. There will be a Part 3. And, Dave, check your Skype.
Oh, okay. I will do that. And
will there be a test at
the
end?
Well, there, yes, you know, well, I should give a test.
Okay. All right. We're going to go ahead and wrap things up then. Tomorrow night, Terry has her call also at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. If you are not on Terry's mailing list by some small chance, and it must be a small chance, please send an email to queensongbird@gmail.com. And do that tonight. Don't wait till tomorrow afternoon. You probably won't get the reminder. But she'll get you on the list so that you get all the mailings, because she does send documents and other information out, as well as the call reminders. And then, of course, around the clock to Monday, there's Dallas Death Discussion. We're in our sixth year on that. We're always there. Never missed a Monday in over 5 years. So you can always figure we're going to be there for some suggestions or help if you have issues. That is at 9 o'clock Eastern. It is on TalkShoe.com. And the PIN number for that call is 54318. Again, that starts at 9 o'clock Eastern, an hour later than the Tuesday and Wednesday night calls. So, again, I'd like to thank everybody for being here. Jesse should be with us next week. And I hope everybody has a great week, and hopefully you'll join us on Terry's call tomorrow. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.